I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's time for our weekly science slot now, which is about menopause, which it's probably fair to say has been a pretty taboo topic for many, many years. But there has recently been a bit of a shift in many nations like the UK, the US, Australia, New Zealand to open up discussions around menopause a bit. But experts say that has also come with a bit of a downside, that natural symptoms and experiences can become over-medicalised with an undue focus on treating and curing menopause. Professor Martha Hickey from the University of Melbourne and Royal Women's Hospital was the co-author of a series just published in the medical journal The Lancet exploring this issue. And Professor Hickey joins me on the line now. Martha, kia ora, and thank you very much for joining us here on Nights.
Thank you for having me.
It might be helpful right at the top here to sort of, I guess, better, you know, define what menopause is and possibly just as importantly, define what menopause isn't. Could you help us out there?
Yeah, sure. So menopause happens to every person who's born with functioning ovaries. And it signifies the end of reproductive life. And in many cases, what people notice is that their periods stop and then they stop permanently. And that's usually at around age 51 years, but it does vary somewhat. And about 10% of people actually have an early or premature menopause.
Are there common symptoms to menopause?
Yes and no. There are common symptoms that have been recorded largely in white women of European origin, primarily hot flushes and night sweats. But if you look globally and talk to women in other countries, they sometimes don't have those symptoms. They might have different symptoms. So there's no one size fits all in terms of symptoms.
I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that humans are actually one of the few animals that go through menopause. Do we know why women do go through menopause, human women?
Yeah, there's some interesting reflection on that and some really interesting data from whales that's come out in the last few weeks. And whales also are mammals that experience menopause. And as a female whale gets older and stops reproducing, one of her jobs is to look after the younger males in the pod to make sure they don't get into fights and don't get into trouble. And it could be that similar role for women after menopause, looking after younger children, remembering that many women used to die in childbirth and small children were often left without anybody to care for them.
That's really interesting. Now, I said in the introduction to this that menopause has been a relatively taboo topic in sort of maybe wider discourse was for quite some time. Why is that, do you think? You know, why have people been reluctant to discuss menopause openly? And even in the medical community, it hasn't been especially well understood up until relatively recently, correct?
Yes, I mean, there's been a different focus. But I think in terms of what your question about why hasn't it been discussed, there's often in many communities, there's quite a lot of shame around women's reproduction. And the same would go for menstruation, for example, and also for, you know, some aspects of pregnancy. So it's not that unexpected that menopause has not been discussed very widely. Plus, in many societies, including our own here in Australia, aging in women is seen in a very negative light. So if you're going through menopause and you're both a woman going through a shameful reproductive event and you're getting older. And those two things can come together in what's sometimes called gendered ageism. And I think that's one of the reasons underlying this lack of discussion. And also menopause, when it has been discussed, it's sometimes been as a joke.
I mean, I read that you were Australia's first female professor in obstetrics, the study of pregnancy. Is that that is mind blowing to me.
Well, in gynecology, so it's not my work isn't in pregnancy anymore. It's in gynecology and in women's health. But that's right. I mean, it is shocking, really.
So, I mean, talk to us a bit about this issue of over-medicalization of menopause, perhaps as a consequence of more open discussions around menopause. How do those two lines intersect with one another?
Yeah, thanks. So I think I just want to make the point that over-medicalization is not the same thing as over-treatment.
Yeah.
What we're saying in this one paper in this series is that menopause is not a disease. You know, it would be a very strange disease if all the women in the world got it at approximately the same time. You know, it's clearly part of a normal transition.
Yeah.
So we just want to turn the focus away from the idea of a disease that needs to be diagnosed and then necessarily needs to be treated, whilst recognising that some people do want treatment and, you know, they have troublesome symptoms that they really need treatment for, and that's great. But as a society, we shouldn't be making it harder for women. I think that's really our main focus. Mm. How are we treating women in the workforce? How are we shaming them for this experience of having symptoms, perhaps in public? So we need to really support women, we think, support women more as they go through this normal transition.
When you talk about supporting a woman who's going through this normal transition, what sort of support are you talking about there?
Yes, so specifically what we're talking about, one of the things we're talking about is high quality information. And it was really shocking to me as I looked through the information that was available about menopause in Australia and in the UK and also in the US. It was all different, you know, different symptoms, different treatments, different risks associated with hormone treatment. And no surprise that people are confused about what's going on. So I think we really need high quality information, preferably before the menopause, so the women know what to expect and they can prepare themselves and, you know, be knowledgeable about where they can go for help if they need it. For the difficult decisions, like should I take medication or not, we can provide proper tools like decision aids to support those choices. The work is really important. It's been a big focus in our paper. So I'm sure there's the same in New Zealand. Women are about 50% of the workforce. And what we learned during COVID was that there were essential workers. So in health, for example, in education, hospitality, and more than the great majority of those are women, and average age is about 45. Mm. So we really need to think about how we value and support those workers. For example, you know, health workers in uniforms and having to wear PPE, that was a very difficult time for those people. Mm.
You mentioned hormone treatment there. Can you just explain how would hormone treatment work in with menopause? How is that a treatment in this space?
Yeah. So it was picked up probably in the 60s, quite a long time ago now, that hot flushes and sweats, which are a common symptom of menopause, particularly, as I said, for white women of European ancestry, that if you took estrogen, then those symptoms got much better. And following that observation, you know, at one point, HRT was the most commonly prescribed medication in the world. So a very large number of women were taking it. Mm. It's subsequently been shown that as well as those benefits for those symptoms, there are also risks. So it's not a straightforward decision that everybody with those symptoms will want to take hormone treatment.
Yeah, well, I asked that partially because we received an email earlier on when I was talking about the fact that we were doing this interview tonight from somebody. And I understand you don't want to give out medical advice, but I thought it might be interesting to put this to you. The email goes, I always felt radiant and very well when I was on the pill and pregnant, i.e. estrogen, and I very much regret not going on HRT during menopause, and at 72 have not felt the same without estrogen. I want to go on HRT now, but my doctor won't prescribe it because I haven't been on it before. There's very little research on the impact starting at my age. My doctor is young and not against HRT, and the practice has a female doctor in it who will never go off it. I'm happy to sign anything and even to be part of research regarding starting this long after menopause. I had a hysterectomy at 49. Any advice or insights from your expert today?
Thank you. So there's a few really important things there. I think what she's saying is about a feeling of feeling better within herself when she was exposed to high levels of estrogen. Now, HRT is not a treatment for that. It's a treatment for hot flushes and sweats, which is, doesn't sound like that's what the problem is. And I think the second key thing, and I think I'm with her GP on this one, is that the older you are when you start it, the higher the risks are. And these are not small risks. They're risks of things like stroke and heart disease. So for somebody who doesn't have the symptoms that it treats and who is at that age and stage, I don't think very many doctors would be inclined to start HRT at that stage.
It is a sentiment, though, that you see quite a lot of. And as a matter of fact, just a couple of minutes ago, we got a text in from someone else saying, question regarding menopause. I feel like my body's trying to destroy me. 3 years of insomnia and counting, weight loss, severe mood swings, depression, inability to cope with stress. Is this normal? I'm concerned about long-term health effects due to a lack of sleep. And I suppose that's what you're talking about with your mission in this kind of area, is making sure that reliable, trustworthy information is available, because this is such a time of uncertainty.
Yes, that's right. And I think one of the really big uncertainties, and it's really not even resolved within the experts in the field, is what symptoms does menopause actually cause? Mm. And the what you just read out from the email sounds much more like a condition like depression than menopause. It's often hard to pick those things apart. But something we flag up in our menopause and mental health paper, two key points. One is that most women don't develop mental health problems as they go through menopause. And the second one is that hormones are not a treatment for depression or any other mental health problem. There are effective treatments available, but that isn't one of them.
When we talk about this idea of over-medicalization, is one of the main things behind that the endless, quote-unquote, resource that the internet provides us? We can be sort of overwhelmed with medical advice that isn't directly about us. It's more generalized and in some cases maybe not that helpful.
Yes, so menopause, going back to what you were saying earlier on, with the increased profile and increased discussion about menopause, which is fantastic, there has been an enormous level of commercialization, by which I mean people selling products or devices or various different things which they claim are going to help you. And I don't know if this is a problem in New Zealand or not, but a problem in other countries has been doctors prescribing excessive levels of hormonal treatments, which then lead to greater risk. So it kind of goes back to my answer to your question about what can you do? Women really need high quality information about this from a trusted source, so that they are less vulnerable to the kind of commercial exploitation which can happen.
There will, though, be cases where medical intervention and treatment is necessary, though, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's an individual decision whether or not to take hormones, and that decision should be based on knowing what the pros are and what the cons are, like any prescription therapy, and also what might happen when you stop.
Got a couple of questions coming through asking about hot flushes. One person saying, what causes hot flushes and can you have them into your 70s?
Mm. So we didn't know what caused hot flushes until relatively recently, but it's now been identified that there's a certain part of the brain called the hypothalamus where there are receptors which seem to be the cause of hot flushes. So they're in the brain. And you can stimulate them or block them. Fortunately, there's medication around which can actually work on that part of the brain and reduce hot flushes. Now, it's not as effective as estrogen, but it's pretty good. And that's something we've just had approved in Australia, and I'm not sure what the situation is in New Zealand, but it will be. There will be more options available within the next 12 months. So that's positive. And the second part of the question, do some people get them into 76? They do. About 10% of people continue to have hot flushes into older age. And that's unfortunate. They're not always severe, but for some people that can be really bothersome.
Yeah, I guess. And I suppose knowing when, well, as with any medical condition, I suppose, knowing at what point something is unusual or requires you to go and seek medical advice is one of the things that will be different from person to person. And so, again, consistency of messaging and information, as you said before, is crucial, I suppose, in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree that individuals, it always astonishes me. I've been in clinical afternoon seeing women who've got menopausal symptoms after cancer. And people really vary in what is tolerable to them. But as a society and as a workplace, we really need to do our best not to make that worse mm-hmm. by making it embarrassing. And we workplace research shows that one of the main reasons that women take HRT is to function at work. Mm-hmm. So we need to think about how we can make our workplaces easier for the women going through that.
It's interesting that you say that because during the election campaign here in New Zealand last year, there was some talk raised about the idea of menopause leave. Do you know whether that exists in any countries or how you rate it as an idea policy-wise?
Yeah, so we've just, the university that I work for has just introduced menopause leave as well, and it's quite a common thing. Unfortunately, when studies have spoken to women who are experiencing menopausal symptoms in the workplace, they haven't actually said that menopause leave is what they want. What they want generally is supportive management. They want to be able to control the temperature where they are. They don't want uniforms that are that they can't breathe with, and they want some flexibility over their hours. But from an organisation's point of view, it's kind of easier for them just to say, here's some menopause leave, and then perhaps not necessarily tackle those issues that are a bit harder.
When you speak about trustworthy information and advice, and we're talking sort of rule of thumb here, what are the best places to find that? And on the other side of the coin, what are places to avoid or to be sceptical of?
I think if you ask yourself the question, is this person going to make money out of me? That might be quite a helpful indicator as to the quality of the information that you might get. I'm a clinical expert for the UK National Institute of Clinical Excellence guidelines on menopause. And they'll be coming out shortly, in the next few months, and we'll work hard to make sure that there's information for patients that matches up with the evidence. But the issue of having a trusted source is really important.
And just finally, you talk about the idea of, you know, support. From the perspective of, I don't know, husbands, wives, children, family, you know, bosses or colleagues or people who work for people who are going through menopause, what advice would you give people in terms of supporting someone who is going through this?
Not laughing at them, that would be a start.
Yeah.
And maybe questioning your own assumptions and maybe the idea of sort of grumpy old women going through menopause and, you know, not being able to think straight and having foggy brains. So I think there's quite a lot of negative messaging that goes around this whole experience that doesn't really tie in with the evidence. Mm-hmm. You know, many women are at the peak of their careers as they transition menopause, and we certainly don't have evidence that they can't do their jobs or you know, they're leaving their work because of that. What our study, we did a study of about 2,000 health workers in Victoria, and that we got a really strong message that women did not want to be singled out as a problem group. So I think it's a little bit of a fine balance, but, you know, done it before with pregnancy, between not patronising somebody or expecting negative things of them, but just bearing in mind that for a period of time they might need some adjustments.
Professor Martha Hickey, thanks so much for coming on and chatting to me about that on Nights. Really interesting and I think really helpful for many people in our audience there.
Thanks so much.
That was Professor Martha Hickey from the University of Melbourne and Royal Women's Hospital.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.